Welcome to Step Into Magic, your weekly online radio show on how to develop your psychic ability, deepen your spirituality, and find your own true purpose. Presented by acclaimed medical intuitive, Josephine Lang. This broadcast is a part of the Wisdom and Intuition Network. This is Anthony Taylor, your host, and on behalf of Josephine, I'll be taking your calls and questions. This week's topic is communing with the divine, uniting with the mystery of life. For anyone new to our show, Josephine has been a clairvoyant healer for more than 25 years. During that time, she's helped thousands of people from around the world to heal from hard-to-diagnose and chronic health issues. She has also been a teacher and spiritual mentor for hundreds of people who treasure her insights, courage, and love.
Hello, everyone. I am so glad you're listening, and it's such a nice thing to be meeting with you every week like this. It's really a delight for me. It really is the shining star in my life right now, and it brings me so much joy. So I really open my heart to you, and I'm so glad you're there. So I first discovered a sense of the divine during my early teenage years when I was out with my horse, Duchess. I saved up my babysitting money when I was 11 and 12, and I went looking for a horse with a ridiculously small amount of money, just $100. But you know how sometimes grace is with us and the doors will open for us where they wouldn't be for anyone else. And I just went knocking on a wrong address and said, "Are you the people with the horse for sale?" And got myself a beautiful, beautiful Mustang buckskin mare. And she was only 4 years old, and her former owner had become pregnant and could no longer ride, and so I just lucked out, and we went charging off into the hills, and I couldn't afford a saddle or a bridle, so I just rode with a hackamore and often just a halter and a rope, and off I went into nature all on my own, and sometimes friends would ride with me, but more often the other teenagers were a little more interested in, you know, flirting or riding in shows and things, and I just wanted to just be with my horse and just be off, so I did. And I began to really realize that, you know, that when you have a deep interspecies relationship like that, and many of you, I'm sure, have had that with a dog or a cat or a ferret or a bunny rabbit or any number of animals, a crow, you know, we can really go in deep with them, and we really see and understand and know that their consciousness is just as varied and individual and wonderful as our own. And so out there in the wilds of the hills, I really reveled in the beauty of the natural world, not only with my horse, but also admiring the energy of the trees and the soil and the air that's always surrounding us. And we can experience this feeling of reverence whenever we're in contact with nature. And for me, the concept of the divine is free from any association with religion, because when I got started with this, I had that option of choosing, as my mother was a member of a church, but my father was an atheist, so it was open. And I sort of went an agnostic route, and, you know, just not really knowing if I believe or not. And that was a really freeing place to be coming from. And as a result, I began to see that there was something that was like the ultimate source of the universe and of consciousness. And I like to think of the divine as the ultimate mystery. That's kind of how I see, that's my version of what God is. And then, as well, that God is pure love, that mystery of pure love. And it's the totality of everything. But before I go any further into this subject, I always like to start our show with a spiritual agreement. And this was a gift from my mentor and teacher, Jana Massey, and it goes like this. And I ask you all to join in with me and make this agreement with me today. And it's, together we acknowledge that everything that we think, that we say, and that we do at this time will be of the highest good. And together we ask for truth, the understanding of that truth, and the wisdom to use it in our lives. Can you all agree?
I do.
Thank you, Tony, and thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Josephine. We did receive a number of really nice messages from our listeners this last week.
Oh, good.
And I thought perhaps I could start just by reading out two or three, and then maybe later get to some others.
That would be wonderful. I'd love to hear them. Thank you.
The first then is from Carl from Geelong in Australia.
Oh.
And he wrote, I just listened to the show and it was a winner. I especially enjoyed Amalia's Peruvian wisdom story.
Me too.
It was great, wasn't it?
It was.
And then Rosa from the Bay Area of California wrote, it doesn't get any better than this tonight. I asked for a nice long show and I got exquisite living for 1 hour. This one has to be the best show ever.
Oh.
That was very nice.
That is great. Thank
and
you,
I'll,
Rosa.
I'll do one more. Marie in Riverside. Can't stop thinking about last night Bonanza show. Wow. The whole show rocked. Oh, and I better just squeeze one more in.
Okay.
This one from Barbara in Paso. Dearest Joseph, that's Paso in California. Dearest Josephine, last Thursday's show was outstanding. I missed listening to it on Thursday, but I've listened to it twice in the last couple of days.
Mm.
Actually, that has worked out great for me, because if I have missed any point, I can simply scroll back and re-listen. I was so glad to learn that a part of this particular show is also on YouTube, so I can re-listen any time I want, and I will, because you are really getting down to the bone.
Mm.
I highly recommend to all your listeners to go to YouTube for this great lesson, maybe the best to date. Well, thank you so much for that, Barbara.
Thank you.
It occurs to me, Josephine, that possibly very few people know that you've been uploading brief YouTube video every week.
It's true.
Yeah, covering some of the same topics that we cover on the radio show.
Yeah.
And there are prayers, meditations, just information, wisdoms, and lots more. So if anyone's interested in that, they're just very brief, short, you know, two-minute YouTubes. Just go to YouTube and type in Josephine Lang and enjoy.
Oh, thank you, Tony.
And then one final thing before you get going, Josephine. If anyone has sent us an email and hasn't gotten a reply, it's because we never received the email or something has gone awry with your return address. For example, we received a lovely message from South Africa last week and we haven't been able to respond. So if you're listening, Wilma, we tried to. please just send us your contact information again if you'd like to hear from us.
Oh, thank you so much for all of that. And yes, absolutely. If you haven't heard back, we do try to make sure to get a response out right away. And also, too, I'm just so glad you mentioned about the YouTubes. I've been having a lot of fun with those. They're kind of short, but they're lovely. I kind of take a really nice little nugget and do a little with the great grace of my dear friend Einar, who helps me with the videographing and doing any little editing that needs doing. He's such an angel. So thank you. Thank you to my darling Einar. And I'm really grateful for all of your messages. They really, you know, I really feel your love and support, and it totally buoys me up, and it's just great. So thank you. So this business of coming into the silent union with the divine, this third type of prayer where we really find our own God self and really lose our sense of self as an individual and enter into that great ocean of divinity. I think, you know, of a time when I was a young girl, about 4 or 5, and my parents took me to the ocean, and there were gentle little waves, and I remember just dancing and squealing in my little sunsuit, you know, and jumping in the water and just splashing, and it's a remarkable experience. I'm sure all of you have had experiences like this where you just sort of lose that sense of self in this most joyous and positive way. And it can also happen in a really quiet way too, like when an artist is deep in concentration, sketching or drawing or something. And there's something about that just being you, just being truly who you are in that quality that really makes that connection. So it's a funny duality because you're being yourself and you're losing your sense of self at the same time. And of course, this can happen quite easily when we're out in nature. You know, sometimes I think of somebody who's running just for the sheer joy of running, or skipping or jumping, or sitting under a tree or climbing, or any number of things that we might do out in nature. It's an easy way for us to slip into that state. There was a wonderful article by Scott Russell Sanders in the Orion magazine in the November-December issue of 2009 that I just loved. And he was talking about these groups of scientists that went to Lookout Creek in the Cascades. And they were studying various aspects of the biodiversity of nature and the interconnectedness of nature. And he decided to go out and do some meditation and just see if he could commune with nature as a whole. And his article that he wrote is called Mind in the Forest. If you get a chance, you can look it up on the internet. It's a wonderful article. I really enjoyed it. And one of the things that he said was that he became, as he was sitting meditating by the side of the creek, looking at the old logs and the mosses and the trees that were mature growing all around him and the young trees, he said that he just became enveloped in the sound of the water. And for a spell, I disappeared in rapt awareness. And I thought that was a great encapsulation of just what we're talking about here, that silent union with the divine, where we just lose ourselves. We disappear, like he says, in rapt awareness. And that's one of the reasons why I like to teach meditation and do meditation myself as a main cornerstone for the development of our psychic ability and our spirituality and helping us to find our purpose. Because when we are in meditation, we really get to that place where we can really listen to the divine. We can really listen to God. And nature is a part of that divinity. And when we are outside, out in nature, we are in our element. We are a part of nature. We come from nature. We are returned to nature after we die. And so when we're in our element, it really opens us up to that ability to listen and to really tune in to the natural world and to the divinity and to God, which is, I believe, love, which is a part of everything. I remember once hearing Graham Nash talking about Joni Mitchell when they were a couple together for a time there in the 70s, I think it was. And he said that when she was writing her music, you know, she would be sitting at the piano and, you know, touching out some chords and writing down some lyrics, and she would be just really lost in her creative process. And that's another aspect of this silent union with the divine, is that really creative process. And he said he could walk into the room and say something like, you know, Joni, what would you like for dinner? Do you want to have broccoli and peas or whatever, you know? And she would murmur something back to him, a response, you know, oh, yeah, right, whatever. And then she would get right back in. She wouldn't even break a beat. You know, she would just not even skip a beat in her creative process, but she would actually respond. A part of her would respond to his question. And then later, you know, he would say, so I made the broccoli. And she's like, what? I don't, she wouldn't have any recollection of it, because another part of her, probably her subconscious mind, would just take over and give the response. But she was so lost in herself, lost in her creative process, lost in her joy, that she wouldn't be able to, you know, really have a recollection of what had occurred. And I thought that was another great example of this. And maybe, Tony, now you could show that first slide of ours there.
That would be great.
Yeah, and this is a quote from the Buddha that I just love, and it was a little bit perplexing to me when I first came across it. It says, do nothing. Time is too precious to waste. Do nothing. Time is too precious to waste. And I thought, what? How can that be? But I see now that when we are doing something like what Scott Russell Sanders out there with the Mind in the Forest, where he disappeared in rapt awareness, or in way also to Joni, you know, I mean, she's not like she's out, you know, gardening or running around or collecting groceries or doing it. She's just right there being who she is. And there's that sort of do-nothingness of just being who you are. And in those moments, that's who she is. She's, you know, writing, she's a songwriter. And so there's a do-nothing quality to that as well. So I'd love to give homeworks, as you know, so I'd love to ask you if you would this week sometime to just take some time and go out into nature, and this can even be in your own backyard, and just be yourself, just for a few months. Just do nothing. Just realize that nature is alive, it's all around you, and that you're never alone, because you're among God's creation. And I love that beautiful quote by Chief Seattle. You know, he was of the Suquamish tribe up near Washington, Blake Island. And he said, you know, every part of the earth is sacred to my people. Every shining pine needle, every sandy shore, every mist in the dark woods, every clear and humming insect is holy in the memory and experience of my people. And he went on to say that we are a part of the earth, and it is a part of us. The perfumed flowers are our sisters. The deer, the horse, the great eagle, these are our brothers. The rocky crests, the juices in the meadows, the body heat of the pony, and of us all belong to the same family. And it reminded me of Amalia's beautiful wisdom that she shared with us last week from the Peruvian elders in the Andean region. They said that, you know, the earth is alive and it's all around us and it's like our mother, and we want to give back to the mother. We want to honor the mother with our every drink and our every meal. We want to thank that which has fed us. And I loved the way she likened it to the mother's milk when we are at the breast, when we're babies. We receive from the mother. She provides all of our needs regarding our nutrition and our hydration. And then after we are done at the mother's breast, we move to the earth, and she provides all of our nutrition and our hydration. We drink the waters from the creeks, and we eat the corn from the plants or whatever it is that we're eating. And so I just thought that was a very beautiful thing. And one of the other things that she said is that when you're out in the garden or out in nature, you're never alone. And so, you know, there's no need to be lonely because you're with your brothers and your sisters, as Chief Seattle said. So when we're out into nature, just go ahead and be yourself. Take a few moments. Realize that nature is alive and that you're never alone. And then notice rather than think. Just let your eyes see, let your ears hear, let your, you know, taste buds, let your with the odors and the smells and the airs, whatever it is. And just let yourself be with your senses, and that will take you there. That will just get you into that place of oneness. It helps us to enter into our right brain, where we know we are all one and part of the same. Yeah.
Well, thank you for that homework, Josephine. I'm really glad you've assigned that, because I noticed lately I seem to have been getting very busy, and it's really easy to forget to do these things, and they're so important, and they're so nourishing, and they're so calming.
Yeah.
And a chance to, you know, connect with yourself and with everything. And it's easy to forget.
It is easy to forget, isn't it? So, yeah, and I love these homework assignments too, because I'm just like anybody else. You know, I'll get busy and wrapped up in stuff, and, you know, and then I need to remember and ground myself. And my dear friend Einar, who I mentioned earlier, gave me a little tiny little gentle pat on the back the other day and just said, oh, yeah, you know, some little more yin is good. I forget how he said it. He's so eloquent that, you know, but it's true. And so we all need these. So I'll be doing this homework assignment as well. And now I'd like to, I often mention Peace Pilgrim, and I'm going to mention her again today because she plays very strongly in our topic today. And if you haven't heard of her, she's got a lovely book which you can access called Her Life and Work in Her Own Words. And this was gathered together by the Friends of Peace Pilgrim, and they're in Shelton, Connecticut. And I'm just going to give you the phone number. It's 203-926-1581. That's 203-926-1581, or www.peacepilgrim.org, and you can order her books. Her book, and I often order them by the case and pass them out, because she, you know, it's so rare to have a true American saint. I mean, I don't think we have very many of them, and she's extraordinary. Not in our modern culture, anyway. I'm sure there were some with the indigenous peoples, but. She walked until she was given shelter and fasted until she was given food. And she, her pilgrimage was truly a pilgrimage in the true sense of letting it be her every footfall be a prayer as she was moving towards her goal, which was helping us all to awaken towards the need for peace. And she began her pilgrimage in 1953, which was right after, you know, World War II, and World War I had probably happened shortly right around the time of her birth, I would imagine. And she walked for, I think it was 30 years. She did 27,000 miles on foot for peace, crossing the nation 8 times, and even visiting Canada and Mexico and Hawaii and other areas, Alaska. And she's a major mentor of mine. And like I said, I'm like everybody else. You know, I might have some bad days too. You know, sometimes I might even get into some bad foods like chocolate or sugar or caffeine or something, and they might keep me up awake at night. And I might have bad thoughts, and the, you know, those things can be so addictive. I really can't blame anyone, and myself not as all as well, if you know I slip into something like that. And of course, we usually tend to do that when we're stressed. We tend to slip into those addictive patterns when we're feeling stressed, thinking that they'll help us, but they really just tear us. They can bring us further down. And so when I find myself in those kind of dark moments in the night, you know, I'll just grab my Peace Pilgrim book and put her under my pillow, because I figure she slept outside so many times that every once in a while it's good for her to have a nice bed right there beside me. And so she's really helped me. And one of the things which I'd like to share with you is a quote that she had, that she said, "Who could know God and not be joyous?" And she was asked, you know, by somebody who said that he'd read her very serious message on peace, and he had expected her to be, you know, much more serious than she was. And she, and that's what she said to him was, "Look, you know, when you get to this state, it's all beautiful. It's okay. You can be joyous." And that has always really lifted me up to think of that, that when we make this connection with our divinity, we really have that joy. So that leads me into, what is the difference between happiness and joy? Because it's a good question. I mean, to me, happiness seems to be more externally inspired. You know, someone gives us a gift, or maybe they pay us a compliment, and or perhaps we find ourselves in a lovely environment and we feel sort of happy. Maybe we're, you know, taking a ride in an amusement park or something. That's, I think, a little more happy coming from the outside. And the American Heritage Dictionary describes happy as being characterized by luck or good fortune and being prosperous, and having or demonstrating pleasure or satisfaction, being well adapted and appropriate. I think that's a very nice definition of happiness. And the dictionary.com says that happiness results from the possession or attainment of what one considers good, like the happiness of visiting one's family. Whereas joy, I think that joy percolates up from deep within the self, and it's linked to our sense of all is well. No matter what, joy is a very unshakable state of mind. And like I was saying, that sometimes when I get into those, you know, dark nights of the soul and I'm not sleeping well or something, or I've, you know, been pushing too hard or whatever, then I have sort of slipped out of my joy there. And I might be able to find happiness at that time, like I could get up and watch a funny movie or something, but not that I would recommend that, because I think it's always best to just stay in the dark and get your rest no matter what. Or I could journal, and I could reach into the depth of myself and, you know, get out all of the negative stuff first of all on the paper and what's troubling me, and then just keep writing and remember gratitude and start to move into some of my spiritual practices. And before I know it, I can actually reclaim that joy, which comes from deep inside myself. And it is a part of that, that knowing the divine. And, you know, when we do that, when we realize that, we know the rightness of everything. Even the, like we were talking about last week, those stinker experiences, those ones that are so uncomfortable, but from which we grow, from which our soul growth really occurs. And that beautiful quote that we had, and this was so profound when I first heard it, it just really knocked my socks off, which was, "Gratitude is my only reaction." And when we, you know, that was the focus of last week's show, was gratitude. And when we really get to that place of gratitude, our joy begins to percolate up, and we begin to step into the flow of knowing, you know, knowing that all is in divine order and that we are learning and growing. And that gives us that sense of well-being that pervades our every experience. So the American Heritage Dictionary defines joy as a condition or feeling of high pleasure or delight. And dictionary.com says that it's the emotion of great delight or elation. And I like that one, elation, because that is a little more sort of that constant, that deep experience.
Well, Josephine, I'm so glad you make that distinction, because for me, I mean, the answer to the question, what makes you happy and what gives you joy, is quite different, really. And mm-hmm. And joy, I think you're right, it just seems to point to something much more personal to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and really the essence of who I am and what my life could be about or is about. And so, you know, when you were talking before about, you know, the question, stay in your joy as a way of finding your purpose, I can really see, you know, the power in that.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
Mm.
And it does really guide us right to our purpose. Yeah, and, you know, if we find that we've slipped out of joy, we need to reclaim it. And that's one of the things that Peace Pilgrim talks about, is she talks about how there was that, you know, early on in her growth, before she made her pilgrimage, she found that there were times where she would slip out of joy and then she would reclaim it again and slip out and reclaim it. And as she continued to work on herself, there was the less and less slipping out. And when she did slip out, she really missed it when she did. And so that was a great motivation to get her back into her joy, so that she could stay on track with her purpose, which was to, you know, basically sell all of her possessions and hit the road as a pilgrim for peace. Yeah, that's beautiful, isn't it?
I know. It seems to me that, yeah, often we get caught up in spending a lot more time thinking about our happiness.
Yeah.
This is making me happy or unhappy, and should I, you know, evaluating courses of action or decisions or whatever in those terms. And
right.
Much rarer for people to ask, you know, does this give me joy? Is this where my joy is?
Yeah, it's a huge difference, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Subtle but huge at the same time.
Yeah.
So then it sort of dawned on me a while back that it's the illusion of our separation from the divine that is the cause of all of our suffering. Not only is our connection with the divine the source of our joy, but the separation, that illusion of our separation, because I don't believe we ever can really be separated, but we can think that we are separate from. And that's where our suffering comes from. And as you may remember, the Buddha said that it is our attachment that is the source of our suffering, and you know, that attachment to whatever individual, you know, problem or thing that we want. And so letting go of that attachment also frees us into that union in a way. So one of the things that that my spiritual mentor Jana Massey would sometimes ask us to do is to stop and to think about, how many times today did you talk with your God? And when you talked with your God, were you expressing gratitude? Were you asking for something? Or were you just simply communicating whatever was taking place, knowing that God is in partnership with you? And she would say, you know, think of this day. Think of this past week. Perhaps you've spoken so much and communicated so much that you cannot count. Or perhaps there was just one time, a very profound time of communicating with your God that you remember well. And I thought that was a nice little reminder for us to realize that we can really have this intimate relationship where we are really communing with the divine, whatever our version of that is. And I loved the way she would always say, your God, you know, whatever your own personal version of that is, you know, like I was saying, for me it's love, or the mystery, the great mystery of love. But everybody has a sort of a different idea, and so just to embrace that is a unique process. And so then I'd like to give another little homework assignment, which is to, and this is a lovely one, but to just sort of think about that as the week progresses. Just, you know, allow yourself to be free to just communicate with whatever your version of the divine is, and allow it to kind of be in partnership with you, and, you know, express your gratitude, maybe ask for something. I've been asking for things this week. I've been, you know, raising my hands up in the air and doing little gratitude dances and, you know, asking for timing and placement. And it's good. It's a great thing for us to do. It really helps us to find and reclaim our joy. And like Peace Pilgrim said, who could know God and not be joyous? So spend some time this week really working with that knowing God aspect of your life, and bring it to consciousness. It's a great thing to do. And then, Tony, maybe you can show our next slide.
Certainly.
I love this little quote. I have a dear friend who is studying up in Washington with Swami Chidananda. And at one point she sent me one of his newsletters, and there was a beautiful line in the newsletter, which is our slide, which says, the purpose of any spiritual practice is to have a direct experience of God. And there's another paragraph that's associated with it, but we didn't use the whole paragraph on the slide. We just have that one line, But the paragraph goes like this. It says, the purpose of any spiritual practice is to have a direct experience of God. Our practice should bring us into a one-on-one contact with the ultimate reality, the ultimate power, the ultimate source from which all of life manifests. To have that contact releases a human being from every misunderstanding that they have about themselves and the nature of life, and at the same time brings an experience of complete, simple happiness and total well-being. While there are many benefits that flow from any spiritual practice, the real point is to have that direct experience. And I just love this quote. I actually have it framed over my altar beside the mirror that I'll sometimes meditate and gaze into my eyes and, you know, lose myself through that deep meditation of eye gazing. And, you know, it's just such a wonderful way to look at that, that we are getting in contact with that ultimate reality, the ultimate power, and the ultimate source from which all of life manifests. And then I love that next sentence where he says, to have that contact releases a human being from every misunderstanding that they have about themselves and the nature of life, and at the same time brings an experience of complete, simple happiness and total well-being. Isn't that great?
It sounds fantastic.
It is fantastic, isn't it? And this is what peace is talking about, you know, when she says, who could know God and not be joyous? Such a beautiful, beautiful thing. Yeah, so, you know, we yearn for our awakening to our divinity, just as divinity yearns for us to awaken to it. It's really a two-way street. We forget that sometimes, and you know, I have a dear, dear friend who shared with me an experience of her when her son was born, and she was having some difficulties with him, you know, quote, latching on and really nursing well at the end. You know, there was hubbub and concern, which of course only made it worse. And then she had the brilliance to go to the World Health Organization video on breastfeeding, and they have a very different view on breastfeeding than from what we have in our Western culture. Because, you know, it's all about, you know, you place the baby on the breast and on the nipple and you get them to latch on and you do it this way. And what she found on that video in the World Health Organization was that there is a certain amount of time, I think it was under 3 months or something, and she caught that window of opportunity where the infant actually has to nuzzle its way to the breast, that there is something about letting that baby find its way to the breast. Because it, not only does the mother learn how to have to feed the baby, but the baby has to learn how to feed itself. And it was such an eye-opening experience for me to just hear her talk about this and to tell me about it. Because it reminded me of this idea of how we yearn for our awakening to divinity, but divinity is also yearning for us to awaken to it. It's a two-way street. The mother wants to nurse the child, and the child wants to be nursed. There's sort of that macrocosm-microcosm idea there that comes into play where, you know, as above, so below, in the bigger picture, same with the smaller picture. And, you know, I think that for real spiritual devotees, there is this awakening. It's an organic, sort of a grassroots process. Now, just like that babe rooting for the nipple, it has to rise up from within us. It's a beautiful way to look at our spirituality.
Yes, that's very interesting, Josephine, because it seems to me that most people have religion thrust upon them, you know,
yeah.
When they're children.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have much say in it. It's just like it comes from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a consequence, they never seek it out for themselves. And it reminds me of a story. When I was at university, I had a friend, and I was at her parents' house one day, and these people came round, and I asked what they were doing, and she said, oh, that's my dad's Gurdjieff group. And he has this Gurdjieff group. And I asked the bishop, well, I don't really know anything about it. I said, aren't you curious? He said, no, not really. It's my dad. You know, so I let it pass. And then maybe 10 years later, she's 30 now, I was speaking with her. And she said, well, I finally got around to asking my dad if I could come along to his Gurdjieff group. And he said to her, I wondered how long it would take you to ask. And he'd been waiting, you know, 30 years. And he'd never once told her about it or spoken about it or anything. She just knew it was there. And then when she got to that age, she was in that place of seeking and wanting some kind of spiritual inner connection or insight or understanding or practice. And she was thinking, hey, my dad has this group, and it's been there all along. And then told me it was really great for her to go in that way when finally, you know, the impulse came from her rather than him saying, hey, we have a Gurdjieff group in this house, and you're going to it.
Yeah. Oh, that's a beautiful story, isn't it? That's really lovely. What a great teaching for you at a young age, too.
Yeah.
Really understanding that organic grassroots process of looking for, coming seeking it.
Yeah, so I've tried to, you know, do something, you know, similar myself as a parent and just leave open doors rather than, you know, requests to walk in this direction.
Yeah, that's great. And it reminds me also, too, a little bit about Ram Dass once when he was asked by some meditators, you know, when should I start teaching my child meditation? And he said, you know, well, really, you have to become somebody first before you try to become nobody. And he said he didn't really advise teaching children meditation that much. I mean, they will do it all on their own naturally, just being themselves out in nature. But he said that we want to really, you know, allow that to come up organically from within them rather than imposing it from without. You know, I sometimes think about that tightening spiral of our spiritual evolution in the fractal of time.
Oh, well, Josephine, you've lost me for a moment.
Okay.
What?
Well, you know, fractals are like a spiral.
Oh, yes,
So a fractal is like a spiral, like the nautilus shell unfurling of a blossom, you know, like a fiddlehead fern or something. And you can kind of, like the layers of an onion, you can kind of catch these different dimensions, you know, all the way around. So on the outside edge, it might be several inches or several yards or several years or several miles before you hit the same point on the spiral again. But as you get into the center of the spiral, where it's really tight, you're going to be hitting those same points at a much smaller frequency, be it time or distance or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if you were to cut the fractal into a pie shape, you know, pie pan, like dividing it into 12 pieces or something. In the middle, those pieces are quite small, just like the tip of the pie is small, whereas the outer edge is longer and wider. And so, you know, that tightening spiral of our spiritual evolution in the fractal of time. I think about, you know, how over time, you know, we've had different things that have happened. Like, I think it was, you know, several hundred years or something between the cotton gin and the printing press. And now we've got inventions happening every other day on the Internet. And, you know, it's so, so hard to keep up because things are in a fractal.
Mm-hmm.
There is that sort of that nature. As the nature has a fractal to it. And, you know, when we think about, so often we think about our, well, when we think about our divinity being within rather than being without, and if we think about the meaning of life being to embody our divinity, because I think that is what, you know, that answer to that question, what is the meaning of life? I think it's to embody our divinity, to really own it. And so I think that we're at that place in our spiritual evolution right now where we are really starting to embody our divinity. We're really starting to understand that there is no separation between us and the divine, that is an illusion. And if people question if there is divinity, you know, I like to remind them that we're here. We're here on earth. And we can't make ourselves be here. We're just here. And we are a part of creation. And, you know, we grow from a baby into a child. And we can't make ourselves grow. Just like we can't make ourselves go from an adult back into an infant. So there is something more at play here. There is something that's happening. And we see and feel and believe in something more than ourselves. We can't make ourselves believe. We just do. And, you know, some people will say, well, Jesus loves you. And then I like to say, well, why not you love you as well? Like that Rumi quote that we've discussed, you know, where he says, let the drop of water that is you become 100 mighty seas, but do not think that the drop alone becomes the ocean, because the ocean too becomes the drop.
Mm.
And so just embodying our own little part of divinity is a really good little step of this. And if God is love and if we are love, then self-love is really at the core. It's, you know, versus self-loathing, you know, because so many of us have self-loathing as a problem. But if we're really focused in our self-love as a fundamental core of who we are, then we see our life as that drop of God. And how can you love God and not love yourself? And I have a dear, dear friend, one of my best friends, who asked me today. She said, you know, she has problems with that self-love thing. And she said, in loving others, you know, when I love others, since we're all one, can this count as self-love? That's a great question. Kind of a nice little way to try to sneak around the issue. But it is true. You know, I mean, in a way we are loving ourselves when we're loving others. I thought she had a very good point, really. But also, too, we do need to also remember to love ourselves and to see and honor that divinity within. So I've got another exercise for you, and this is one, again, from my mentor and teacher, Jana Massey, and it is to activate the heart chakra, which is the seat of love, and for ourselves and for others, and it is in part one of those, you know, God self placements, along with our eighth chakra above our head. But our heart is that seat of our, you know, also kind of connected with the right brain, and it helps us to know that we are all one. So go ahead and just relax and get comfortable, and you can close your eyes if you'd like. And then just gently place your hands together in the prayer position and feel the energy passing between your two hands. And then move your hands just a little bit apart and allow yourself to still feel the energy there. And now lightly, just lightly press them together. And then just allow yourself to relax your hands down to your lap. And when we do that, we activate our heart center. The hands are, you know, they are, our arms are extension from our heart, and they move down. Our hands help us to move forward with our purpose and with our love in the world. And they're associated with that fifth chakra, that heart chakra. And our heart is the seat of our love. It's our God space. And this is the true guide of our lives. So just know that at any time you can activate your heart center and find guidance with this exercise if you sit in that space a little bit. And that, I think, is why we have that as a prayer position, the hands together. And so then just go ahead and allow yourself to come back to your normal consciousness. Just stretch a little bit and open your eyes. And just become aware of the surroundings around you. And know that you can do that anytime you like. It's a beautiful little exercise to center us in our heart center, in our God space.
Thank you very much for that, Josephine. I feel refreshed, I feel more awakened, and I feel in a much, I don't know, gentler, kinder, more loving space.
Me too.
Thank you. Now, this might be a good moment to share another couple of messages.
Sure.
Okay, so this one is from Melanie from North County in San Luis Obispo. And she writes, "So grateful for the love that you are, Josephine. Because of you, I am blessed, and so are many others." That's really nice.
Aw, thank you, Melanie, honey.
And then Elaine from California writes, "Tell Frank that these gorgeous, gorgeous pictures are worth God's words. One picture is worth a thousand words. Your pictures pull me out of myself and into God's space. They are deeply appreciated."
Oh, thank you, Elaine. I will tell him. He'll love hearing that.
He will, won't he? That was really nice.
Yes. Well, then let's just move right along here. Some see that the source, you know, this, what we refer to as God as the source, as being an organizing principle behind all of our lives. And others see the divine as sort of a fundamental consciousness that pervades everything. I do see that, like Chief Seattle and like Amalia was speaking last week about the Andean Peruvian elders. And another person that I've read, which is Michael Rhodes, his book Talking with Nature, he has a beautiful description where he was saying that, well, I'll just kind of jump into here a little bit to this. He says that he was out hiking and he had gotten some blisters and things, and he said the blisters had long since turned into holes gouged into the flesh, which bled freely as I walked. And he said, repeatedly I told myself I would collapse after the next 50 paces, another 50 pain and walk. My mind was dazed, my body numb as I thought, God, I can't keep going. What do I do? And then, without doubt, his exhaustion erased all resistance, for into his mind powerfully came a flow of words, and that they were, why do you choose to walk this way alone and alienated from the surrounding abundance of energy? The plants around you are filled with energy. All life is energy. This is yours if only you can be aware that you are not separate. You are not. You are part of the whole. Be open. Be loving. Become all in one and one in all. And right away, exhaustion, he said, erased resistance. He said, I do not know how, but in the blaze of inner realization came knowing, and with this knowing came energy. And he said, in moments I was a powerhouse, vital, alive, and aware, while the pain receded to no more than a background murmur, unimportant in the overall act of life. I became one with my environment. Suddenly I was alive in a way never before experienced. I related to every twig, every leaf, every blade of grass, the living soil, the fading, watery sun, and became part of myself, and I in turn became a part of the whole. And then he was out walking with another friend, Hunter. Now, Hunter was leading the way, who was also nearly out on his feet. And as I watched him stumbling along, I felt such a love for him, for all he was as a person, that my knowing also encompassed him, and I called out, Hunter, let love embrace you in its power. Love, love, Hunter, love your environment. As I had been, he was too exhausted to question my sanity or resist my words, and the same energy which had entered me swept him up also, our pace doubling and trebling as we strode along. And 2 hours later, when we sat in the only shelter on the walk with the storm raging around us, Hunter looked at me and paused, and then with awe in his voice he asked, wow, what happened back there? What indeed? Isn't that great? And when we really connect in with this fundamental consciousness, this, you know, others sometimes refer to it as a God without name or form, this, you know, this beautiful part of ourselves, we can really enter into that energy that pervades everything. Maybe you can show the next slide, Tony, then.
Certainly.
This says, when you find God, it will be in the stillness. It will be within. And I think that that's what happened there, that he found, you know, the divine. He was, there was a little moment where it could squeak in, where he was just sort of too exhausted to resist. It came in through the stillness, and then there it was within him, all of that energy. It's beautiful, isn't it?
Yes, it really. I mean, it's reminding me. I'm sure there's a comment. Is it Rumi? You would know about seeking rather than seeking love. Is it seeking to remove the obstacles that you've built in your way to it? Is it something?
That's
like,
it.
Is that
yeah,
it? Perhaps you can say it for us.
Mm-hmm. I'm not clear on it exactly myself, but I do remember what you're referring to. Just removing, rather than seek for love, seek to remove the obstacles that block the love, something along those lines.
Yeah, and I think it's, well, I was having that idea because it seems to me what you're saying here, that the thing that you're seeking, it's already there.
Yeah, it is already there.
Mm.
Yeah, and Peace Pilgrim again, you know, she said that when we really make this connection that everything is provided for us without even asking, she said that all of our needs are met. And she said, even the words to speak, and as a public speaker, I found that so intriguing, that when we just give ourselves over, the world, the words just flow. And that's what she did, and that's how she, you know, made her pilgrimage, which is so beautiful. We have another slide there from Peace Pilgrim that perhaps you can show, and this one is a little poem that she used to use, and it's beautiful. It goes, peace be still and know that you are God. And she would say this as she would walk along, and then she would go, peace be still and know that you are. Peace be still and know. Peace be still. Peace be. Peace. Isn't that lovely?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Peace be still and know that you are God. I sometimes say this to myself when I'm falling asleep at night or when I'm trying to fall asleep. Peace be still and know that you are God. Peace be still and know that you are. Peace be still and know. Peace be still. Peace be. Peace. It's lovely, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very nice. So, when we realize that we're one with everything, we can access the consciousness in everything. and we can really allow our empathy to bloom. And then we can understand what it's like to be, you know, our spouse or our other family members. It can really help us to move into understanding. And that understanding really supersedes the need for our forgiveness. I mean, forgiveness is wonderful if we can't understand the other person's point of view. But if we can actually take that next step into really seeing what it's like from their perspective, when we really understand that we're all one and we're one with everything and we're a part of that God consciousness or that fundamental consciousness that pervades everything, then we can really allow our understanding to step in and we can really see things from their perspective. We can see things from the perspective of the birds or from the fish or the trees or the water. And that's why I love this book, Talking with Nature, so much, because it really helps us to see the perspective of nature. And we can even see the perspective of what it's like to be in the space in the cupboard across the street. It's really quite an amazing thing. And that's sort of how I do my work as a medical intuitive. I allow myself to just, as an empath, to just move into the other's sphere and just feel what's going on there. And this is one of the ways that we can develop our psychic ability, is through really developing our spirituality and really understanding that when we really get that we are all one, when we really move into that right brain perspective of unity consciousness, that we can feel and understand what the other person's viewpoint is. And maybe you can show that next slide then, Tony.
Certainly.
This one says, it's a Rumi quote, "Everything in the universe is within. Ask all from yourself." And that's what happens when we step into that unity consciousness. We really understand that everything in the universe, as we have access to it all, our within is gigantic. Our within is universal in size.
Yeah, it's a really, it's an enormous thought to grasp, isn't it?
Yes.
Just how vast we are if we allow ourselves to be.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, universal in size. And then just a little bit more about Peace Pilgrim. She had, early on in her moving ahead with her spiritual development, her life was so profound. She just really gathered up these wonderful lessons and really used them for her growth. And she decided that one of the things she would like to do is to help people, and to help people with whatever their inspirations were, because she knew the importance of inspirations as being something that was connecting us to our joy and to our guidance from our higher self or from our God self. And so she began to help people in a place where they were differently abled emotionally and mentally. And there was this one young man there who was a big guy. He was over 6 feet tall, and he was very strong, and he always wanted to go hiking. He wanted to go on a hiking trip, but he had been known to have bouts of violence, and so much so that he had once put his mother in the hospital for a couple of weeks. And she knew about this, but she thought, that's okay, I'm going to go with him. I want him to. I am inspired to help him do what he would love to do, and he'd really love to do this. And she'd never seen him. She had never seen him, as she said, go off the beam before. But when they got up, on they had started off with a great time. They had a wonderful hike. They got up to the top of a mountain, and then a thunderstorm rolled in. And she said she saw him go off the beam for the first time, and he a total change in his countenance came over him. He got a very different look on his face, and he came to her, began to come towards her, and he began to beat her about the arms and the face, and she just listened to her inner guidance on what to do, and she looked at him lovingly, and she smiled at him, and she prayed for him, and she was praying for his well-being and for him to find his way through this inner storm that he was experiencing. And she, you know, held him in her love. Like what Ram Dass says, you know, do what you must do with another person, but never take them out of her heart. Take them out of your heart. But what she did in this case was she just held him in her heart and held him in that place of love. And she said it didn't go on for very long. She said that he was very clumsy in that state, and that she could have picked up a stick or something and hit him, but she was not called to do that. She just waited for that storm, which was quite brief in his own mental attitude, to pass. And then she said he went into great remorse, and it was a deep remorse, deeper than she had ever seen anyone go into before. And he said that he felt, you know, so terrible about it. And he said, I guess you're going to want to go home now. And she said, no, I do not want to go home now. But you will remember this moment. And when you feel that come on you again, you will remember this remorse. And it will help you to change. And she said that 10 years later, she encountered him again. And he said, you know, he had completely healed himself, and he had entered what they would call normal living. And he said, you know, I was never violent again. He said, oh, I know, there was one other part. When he was hitting her, he said, right afterwards, as he went into his remorse, he said, you didn't hit back. Mother always hits back. You didn't hit back. And she said, no, I'm not going to hit back. And when he came back into, you know, 10 years later, when she saw him again, he said that he'd never got violent again. He said that when he would feel that feeling come, begin to rise up in him and start to come over him, he would remember her words, and he would remember her kindness, and he would remember her looking at him with love, and he would not get violent, and he would not get abusive. He would stop, and he corrected himself. And she said that some people would have said that, you know, those bruises on her arms, that that was not the best way to go about correcting the behavior. But she said that what, and I loved what she said. She said, you know, what are a few bruises in comparison to the transformation of a human heart? And she said that it was shortly after that time that she realized that no one could hurt her spiritually. That she might be hurt physically, but that she could only hurt herself on a spiritual level by having a wrong action or a wrong reaction, like bitterness or anger or fear. And she said that when she made that realization, that she just felt so free, that her spirit would be undamaged so long as she could remain in love. And I think that, you know, the same with Ram Dass when he says that, like I said, do what you must do with another person, but never take them out of your heart. Or Mother Teresa in Calcutta, working with the sick and the diseased and the aged. You know, she said, I am seeing my beloved in all of his many distressing disguises. And with that, Tony, maybe you can put on that last slide for us.
Certainly, Josephine.
Yeah, and this one says, this is by Jeshua ben Joseph, which is the Aramaic name for Jesus, son of God, son of Joseph. And I just love this little quote. It's beautiful. It says, to see as God sees, to feel as God feels, to know as God knows, the beloved sees only the beloved. And I think that that's exactly what was happening with Peace Pilgrim and with Mother Teresa, that they understood our oneness so deeply and our union with the divine, which is a part of everything, which is universal in size, that we really get to that place where we are the beloved and we see only the beloved around us, everywhere we look.
Well, Josephine, that's truly inspiring. And maybe a wonderful place to stop, because I've got bad news. We're just about out of time.
Well, I guess so then.
Oh, it was wonderful.
Oh, I'm so glad you liked it.
Yeah, it felt like it was a real crowning sort of, like, I don't know, place to arrive at.
Yeah, tie it all together.
Yeah,
thank you. You're welcome. My pleasure. As Peace said, you know, even the words to speak, so there they come.
Thank you, Josephine. So let me just say that the link to next week's show can be found on Josephine's website at stepintomagic.com. Just click on the top menu for radio. And if you have a question for us or would like to be included in our weekly newsletter, simply go to the contact page of Josephine's website, and where you can send us a message. So, Josephine, are there any parting words that you'd like to say?
Oh, yes, and thank you so very much for that, Tony. Our prayers can bring us into that one-on-one relationship with the divine. And what we want to do is to just have the intention for that and then take the action for that, that action that will help us to come to oneness. But in closing, I'd like to thank you all so very much for listening and for giving me the gift of your time. And I'd like to finish with this little blessing, which is, as our gifts are given in love, they are received in love. And we honor their wise use and their increase for all concerned. And so it is.
Thank you so much for that, Josephine.
You're welcome.
So, as always, it's been a real pleasure talking with you, and I trust that everyone listening has learned lots about the prayer of silent union with the divine. This has been show number P-3.14, And if you've enjoyed the show, we really hope that you will tell your friends. We look forward to having all of you join us again next week, when Josephine will be talking about other prayer forms and blessings that can unite us with our divinity.
Tony and I wish you all insight, wisdom, and magic as you pursue the journey of inner knowing. And I hold you all in light and in love. Thank you so much for listening. This is Josephine Lang. Until next week, good night. Thank you.